And those moments that feel like lightning in a bottle
Yeah.
moments are actually a result of years of hard work and networking
Totally.
and luck.
Hello, and welcome to episode 44 of Untamed Shrews Women Talk Theater, presented by the Flagstaff Shakespeare Festival. I'm Dawn.
And I'm Hannah.
And I'm Becky. In today's episode, we will be joined by my friend Rachel Dean, a pianist and composer who has worked on Broadway and beyond.
But first, shrew check-in time. How the heck are you, my shrews?
Oh boy.
Tired. Yep. Yes, tired.
Don made a face. Don made a face.
And it's just we just got through opening weekend of the summer season, and you guys know how that is. It's like every single day it feels like there's 25 fires to put out. It's just like yesterday things seemed to have gone okay, except maybe there was some trouble with the
Oh
restrooms.
no.
So we're trying to get that sorted. But yeah, it just feels like 2 weeks of triage. Getting the tent up and then moving actors into the tent, and then every single day, 17 things go wrong. And so it's like, okay, and now we're erecting a barrier because audience members think it's chill to just harass actors about ticketing or
Oh
whatever.
no.
And so it's like, okay, well, now we're doing this, and now we're doing that, and now we're doing this. So yeah, it's just so much getting through those 2 weeks. It was so awesome to have rehearsals in the Beaver Street Theater. It just went so smoothly. It was like, it's a known quantity. We understand the space. We have control over everything. So it's so easy to just make sure it goes smooth, and there's places for drinks and there's places for food, and everyone has what they need. And then as soon as you're at the
Take
tent
it
and you're setting
away.
up the tent and you're in someone else's home, we're so grateful to be at Lowell Observatory, but it's their home, not our home. So suddenly you're guests, so you're kind of like tiptoeing around here and asking very gently for this and trying to accommodate
Yeah.
everything they're asking for. And it's just like, and it's
A lot to
outdoor
manage.
theater. So, it's like right now there's rain, right now there's bugs. The tent is leaking. Justice and I had to fix. Last year we had a leak in the tent, and we just used this like extreme weather, like super thick Gorilla tape, and like put it up the seam, and it worked great. We did it this year, and because we're at a new location and the sun is more on the top of the tent, it couldn't hold up in the heat, so it just fell right off. So we literally, in the middle of the night one night, I was like, what about gutters? What about rain gutters? Do we install rain gutters on the roof of the on the underside of the top of the tent? And so that's literally what Justice and I did. And like the installation process actually went pretty well, but we were just joking because like I'm obsessed with zip ties. Like I'm like zip ties, zip ties, zip ties, especially during the summer season. And like if I don't have
Zip tie
just like
everything.
buckets of zip ties. And so Justice and I are just sitting there looking at the roof of the tent, and he's like, is there a way to fix this with zip ties? And I was like, no. And then we got
But
the
man,
rain
I
gutters,
wish.
and we were like, wait, how do we install the rain gutters? And I was like, Justice, really big zip ties. And that's what we did. We used like those like epic plumbing zip ties, and I was like, we can fix this with zip
Wow.
ties. We
Wait.
can.
Dawn, I think I've sent it to you, but there was a video that I sent you that was like, Big Zip Tie doesn't want you to know. Did I send that to
Oh
you?
yeah, how
They're
they're reusable.
reusable.
Oh, they are?
I tr We
How?
tried, we actually tried that. Like, you're supposed to be able to depress the little
Open
tongue
them.
and pull them back out. I don't know what kind of tool you need, but it is not any kind
Not
of
at
tool
least
we have.
efficient enough.
No.
But
Big
the
zip
guy, there
tie.
was like an Instagram reel while the guy
Yeah,
opens it
he
up and
did
he's like, Big
send
Zip Tie doesn't want you to know that you don't have
it
to cut these off. And we're all like, whoa. Every theater administrator is like, what?
Yeah, it's so funny. So anyway, it's just been a lot on top of, having 2 kids. And Blake starts preschool next week.
Oh,
What?
yeah.
That's so
That's
early. I was
crazy.
pregnant with him when we started this podcast, and now he starts preschool.
Wow.
He's 3 and a half, and I just think, he either stays at his like 2 day a week daycare, which is more for like little babies, or we send him to preschool 3 days a week. And I just think he's so ready. He's ready to like learn and be with other kids. And, especially when we get to like halfway through the year and he's four, I'm sure he's just going to be like so ready to be, in that environment. And it's a little co-op preschool, so it's very sweet. And two of his
Not
closest friends are
overwhelming.
going there. Both Soren and Luca are going there, so he'll be with them.
Oh.
So yeah, it's super sweet. So yeah, it's gonna be a big change for us, but he'll be in preschool.
But that'll also
Wow.
mean you have more time with Willa, had to have one-on-one Willa time, and then you'll have time for, working and stuff. Like I know when my sister's kids went to school, or
Yeah.
two out of three, now she has individual time with her daughter.
Yeah.
Or she can just get a lot more done and like she busts it out in those few hours, when they're busy. So
I know. People are always
yeah.
like, how do you do everything? And I'm like, I'm the definition of if you want it done, ask a busy person. Like, that is, I am the definition of that.
Yeah,
If
truly are.
I do it immediately, is how I do it. And if I don't, then it will never get done. So I do it immediately. And I can get like a day's worth of work done in an hour now. It's just like, boom, 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 boom. Just,
Yeah.
yeah. So anyway, that's how I am. Becky, you're tired too. Why are you tired? It's just summer.
just yeah, summer, working full time and then going to rehearsals or well, then tech, and now of course the show's open. But yeah, and it's summer in Flagstaff, so there is always something to do, and I want to do it. I don't want to slow down. I don't want to not do the thing. And just this past week, I was at the aerial studio every single day for 5 days
Whoa.
straight. Or, well, from, yeah, 5 days straight. No, 6 days. I don't know. But I was like, I mean, I wanted to do that, but my body is like, please just take a break.
No.
Just
Could
for
you
a
not?
day.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, we've opened the shows. I'm in King Lear. I'm also, talking about Ariel. The Ariel showcases are coming up in a couple of weeks, including the Narrative Circus Ariel class, written and directed by Hannah Fons Johnson. And yeah, so just, I don't know, always doing a show. It's great.
Woo. Very
Yeah.
busy. Nice.
Yeah,
Well, anything
Hannah.
else? No?
I don't think so.
No
I don't know. I'm sure that I'm forgetting something, but
worries.
anyway. Yeah.
I'm also exhausted. Yesterday was like the first day that Jacob and I had nothing to do in the evening in like a month and a half. So that was really nice. Yeah, it's just been a lot. We've had my brother was here in town for a full month, which was awesome. And then my in-laws, my mother-in-law and my brother-in-law came for a week, and then we went to go visit my other brother-in-law and sister-in-law in North Carolina. So we have had family basically for about 6 weeks straight. So we just got back this week, and all on top of that, we had a house emergency and car emergencies, and it's just been like one thing after another. So and my car is out of commission again. So it's been in the shop three times in like 2 weeks.
Oh no.
So yeah, that's been rough. So yeah, honestly, just try like today. I don't have a lot of plans, which is good because we're just so behind on life stuff. Like we need to work on the yard and we need to, do this and that and run errands, and we just have had no time for that. So honestly, yeah, just catching up on that. And then, as Becky mentioned, the Narrative Circus show that I am teaching, directing, writing, etc., goes up in a few weeks. So I that's kind of been my main artistic endeavor, is working on that. And I also booked a workshop here in town that I'm excited for that comes up in a few weeks. And I've got just like a couple little one-off aerial performances and little things like that. So yeah, Jacob goes back to, oh, Jacob got a new job. So,
Yeah, that's right.
yeah, so Jacob just told his old job a few weeks ago, like not even like a week and a half ago, that he was leaving, accepted a new job. So he's working at a different school here in town, still teaching guitar. So now he's like creating a program at a whole new school. So anyway,
Wow.
it's like a
He has to
whole
create the
ideal.
program? Oh, wow.
They have had guitar classes in the past, not classical.
Okay.
So they own, I think, like three guitars or something like that, like very, very low key. So they had to, start over from scratch by a set of, 10 or 15 guitars, like school guitars and all that. So yeah, he's starting from scratch. And so he goes back to school in like 2 weeks. So we're also trying to enjoy summer, the last few weeks of summer. But Jacob is going to have Fridays off. His school only runs Monday to Thursday. So we are very much looking forward to the 4-day work week in our home. We're going to try our best. I'm teaching a Friday morning fitness class at the studio at 9 a.m. But after that, like we can get out of Dodge, like whatever it might be. So I'm excited to have long weekends every weekend. So that's gonna be good. Yeah, that's me.
And now over to our interview with my friend Rachel.
Woo!
Yay.
Hey,
Hi,
everyone.
Rachel.
Hi, how are y'all?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. Thank you so much for having me.
Of
Yeah,
course.
we're so excited to have you here. So you are podcasting in from the great New York City.
Woo! Yes, I'm calling from Queens, specifically in Astoria.
Oh, that's where I lived.
Really? Oh, it's
Yes.
amazing.
That's awesome. What subway stop?
I am equally far from the 30th Ave and W and the 46th Street MR.
Okay, I was Broadway and 41st. Yes. Nice.
That's
Okay,
cool.
so
Which was hit first coming out of Manhattan? Hannah's stop or Rachel's stop?
I think mine.
Yes, I think you're right.
Okay,
Yeah, by like one stop.
Neighbors, practically neighbors.
Neighbors.
That's true.
Yes.
That's amazing.
So Rachel, we're so excited to talk to you because this is the second in our little mini series of Demystifying Broadway. And you have worked on Broadway as well as done, I know you've had a workshop with some pretty big Broadway stars, and you're a composer in your own right as well. And we would just love to kind of hear your backstory about how you got there and what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So I moved to New York about 10 years ago,
Nice.
almost exactly this summer. Yeah, I know. Wild, a wild thing to say. And so I grew up playing piano. And so I started playing piano or taking lessons when I was six, started writing songs when I was like 11, probably earlier than that actually, but just in terms of the writing down and being like, this is officially a song. That was around age 11. And they were not good, but that's when it started. And then I went to undergrad at the University of Miami in Florida for theory and composition. And then while I was there, and while I was in high school also, I was playing for shows. I was playing for show choir. I was getting into the musical theater world. And it wasn't like a love at first sight thing. It was like, oh, this is cool. I like the people who do this. I started writing songs that sounded like it without realizing that that's what I was doing. And when people would say, oh, that sounds like a musical theater song, I'd be like, no, I'm a singer-songwriter.
No.
Yes. And then I went to college and was playing for the musical theater department, and I started writing with people there, collaborating on musicals. And eventually I was like, maybe this is what I want to do. I just really loved the collaborative aspect of it. I loved getting to work with people whose jobs I knew absolutely nothing about, but thank God they know how to light the stage. And I loved everybody's brains coming together to make a thing better than it could have been by itself. And so then I knew that I needed to go to New York, and I didn't know how to get there safely, if that makes sense, because I didn't have any connections there at all. And so I applied for grad school at NYU. They have a musical theater writing program, an MFA program. And so I applied to that and luckily was accepted. And so I moved there, but right when I moved, which was see, May of 2015, right before I left Miami,
I met somebody who had worked with Alex Lacamoire before because Alex grew up in Miami. So Alex Lacamoire is as Lin-Manuel Miranda's basically right-hand man, his music guy. So they did In the Heights together. He was his orchestrator and music director. And obviously Hamilton, and they're like the ride or die guys. And he's a big part of making Hamilton sound the way that it does. But at the time, I only knew him from In the Heights. Hamilton had been at the Public, but it wasn't
As
like
big as it,
I
yeah. It
no,
hit in like, what was that? Like 2017 is when it like really hit.
Exploded.
I think
Ish.
it opened in 2015, I think. And then just like and
Yeah.
so the 2016 Tonys and the Pulitzer and all of that.
Okay. Okay.
So they were not even rehearsing yet for Broadway when I was graduating. And this person was like, "Oh yeah, I know him. I'll introduce the two of you." And I was like, "Okay, yeah, like that's gonna do
Do
anything, but
anything.
sure, thanks." And it turns out that he's just an amazing musician and artist and man who likes to help other young people get their start. Because when he was 23, someone took a chance on him and had him sub on The Lion King
Nice.
as a keyboardist. Yes, and so he's been. I think he never said this out loud, but it was clear to me that it was his mission to sort of pay it forward. And so he actually reached out to me and we had a phone call. And then he was like, "Well, why don't you come in during like a lunch break of one of the rehearsals and we'll like see how you play."
Oh,
And so
wow.
I was terrified. And so I did that and sight read some of the book because sight reading is my strongest suit by far. And we can talk about that a bit later. But I
Cool.
was like, that'll be what I lead with. And so I read out of the actual Hamilton score. And this was before the cast recording had come out. So
Right.
hadn't had a chance to like pre-listen.
Memorize it,
Yeah, right.
yeah.
And that went well. And then he invited me to come and sit alongside the associate music director in the pit while they were playing post opening. And so I like sat in like underneath the stage where everybody was performing above. And I was like watching all of the musicians play and like watching the sheet music go. Still hadn't seen the show. And that went well. And then they were like, "So what's your availability?" And I was like, this is not how this works. This is like I was
Dang.
shocked. Yeah. Because I never thought that I never thought I would be playing piano for money. B, I never thought that I would be playing on Broadway. That just like wasn't a dream that entered my sphere. And so I felt
Yeah.
very, very lucky and a lot of imposter syndrome. But that's essentially how it works. And now they have I understand it to be a pretty standardized audition process, so to speak. For pianists, they send like a packet out, and you have to like record yourself playing five songs or something within 24 hours. But they just didn't have any of that. They were just like feeling it out at that point. And so that's how I started on Broadway. And it's like a sh as like I felt like I didn't go through the ringer, like I didn't go through the steps that you're supposed to go through. I just got like catapulted into it. But I guess that's what happens sometimes. And it's not like, all of us have done many, many years of hard work before we got to where we were today. And those moments that feel like lightning in a bottle moments are actually a result of years of hard work and networking
Totally.
and luck, all of it.
I was going to ask, so were you at NYU Tisch in grad school at the same time that that all of this was happening?
Yes. So they asked about my schedule and I was like, honestly, it's like a magical Hogwarts moving staircase in the fall. Like, I don't know where I could reasonably find time to come rehearse, but in the spring it gets better. And they're like, great, we need people in the spring. So I was like stealing away time. I was like going into the practice rooms at NYU and like trying to like rap and play at the same time, learning that because that's what they want their pianists to be able to do. And so I was
Whoa.
doing that, and then I was going back to my like work study job, making copies, and then I was writing my
Yeah.
like final year one project. Like all of it was
Yeah.
happening at the same time.
That's crazy. Your story doesn't sound dissimilar from my friend Dahlia, who we had on. When she like made it to Broadway, right? Quote unquote. It just kind of happened. And I think that's kind of what we've found in all of our conversations over 44 episodes. When we talk to people about success or landing the job or getting the thing they want, It is a eventual like kind of explosion of 10, 20, 30, 40 years of work that all of a sudden the puzzle pieces just come together. It's not typically like it's just usually this like weird happenstance. You meet someone on the street, you meet someone in an audition hallway, like something happens where you make the right connection or someone sees you, and it's just kind of serendipitous. And it sounds like that's kind of what happened to you, which is awesome.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
But again, I appreciate you specifying, but also I did the work. Like, yes, it was serendipitous, but you did the work to be ready for it. You know what I mean? You put in the hours on the back end, you know? So that's awesome. So before we get too into it, Becky and Rachel, how do you know each other?
Totally just forgot to mention that.
But then I have a
So,
lot more questions.
yeah, right.
So we met through my friend Ian, because, and I assume I can say this, but Ian and Rachel are dating. You have been for 5+ years. Yeah. And we met, I guess it was pre-pandemic, so it must have been like 2018 or 2019, kind of like right when Ian moved to New York, right? Yeah. And how did you two get connected to each other?
So I one of my musical collaborators lives in Ohio, one of my co-writers, and that's where Ian is from. And so he had taught at some universities out there, and a couple of his former students were in a show that I wrote that was being performed in Ohio. And so and we didn't meet then, but then Ian moved to New York in the fall of 2018. And so one of those students slash cast members was like, "Oh, you two should meet, you do the same thing, you're both music directors, whatever." And it was a great meeting. We both were dating other people at the time, so it was not like a meet cute. But eventually those relationships ended organically, and now we are together. And so that's how we met. That's very cute. And then
Friends first.
Rachel, you also have a connection to Arizona. So that same project that was performed in Ohio, the Anxiety Project, the Phoenix Theater Company and Arizona State University were collaborating on bringing some new works to the fore. And so the Anxiety Project was selected for a reading and a workshop series, and eventually to be recorded as a cast album with the ASU students, which was incredible. Including the musicians were students, everybody involved except for the engineer was a student at the time. And it was an amazing experience, I think, I hope for everyone. Because how often do you get to be part of like originating a cast album as an actor in college?
Totally. Yeah, never. Just one time.
And so I've been to Phoenix now many times and love it out there. I know that's a little far from Flagstaff, but
Hey, it's at
still
least the same time zone. I don't
in our
know.
region. We go down there all the time for
Yeah,
sure.
yeah. Oh, and
Nice.
actually, sorry, Rachel, Hannah, and I, we all have a connection with
Oh, right.
now the Rev, but formerly Merry Go Round Theater Company in the Finger Lakes, New York. Rachel, what you've worked with them. Do you want to say what you're doing with them?
One of my earliest gigs was playing auditions for them in the when they would come
Nice.
down to find actors from the city. And so Brett Smock, the artistic director, who is an amazing person, like we really hit it off. And eventually we also did one of my shows, Medusa. We did a development week up there as part of their pitch residency, where you go up with a couple of collaborators, you work on your piece, and then you also form it into this like 1 hour long pitch session, so to speak, to see how it lands with their audience, because it's really valuable to see, oh, like maybe your show is loved in New York City. What's it like upstate? Very different audiences.
Yeah,
It's
fair.
very
And
helpful.
the pitch was actually my first job out of college, with
Oh my
Merry-Go-Round.
gosh.
It was their second year, that they were doing that. And I came on as a production assistant, for 10 weeks. And then years later, and I think we had just missed you. I think you were maybe like there the week before we were
You
there,
did, yeah.
or maybe it was the year before or something like that. But yeah, I don't know. Everyone works with everyone in theater.
The world is so big, but the world is so small. And
So,
as
so
I get
small.
older, that's the only thing I ever learn. Like, it's just insane. Like, literally, you'll go to like a different country, you'll be like, wait, do I know that person? And you're like, whoa. Like, it's just crazy. Like, it's just, yeah, insane.
I feel like I've told this story on the podcast, but And this has nothing to do with Broadway. I'm so sorry, but it just sparked because you literally said the exact thing. The town that we moved to in Wisconsin when I was in junior high, it was like a town of like 400 people. I mean, it was a
Whoa,
super small
wow.
town, and there was this guy who lived on the edge of town who was a photographer, and he was the only photographer, so he did my like senior photos. And then I ran into him in the gift shop of the Louvre.
What? No way.
When I went to
Yeah.
Paris, I was
That's
like, what? Gordon
wild.
Browning, what are you
Yeah.
doing in the gift shop of the Louvre at the
Wisconsin
same time?
man. Yeah, you exist only in Wisconsin. What?
It was so weird, but yeah, that it's true. The world can feel very small.
Super small.
But that works out really, just to bring it back to this kind of thing, like that works out really well when it ends up being that one connection that you need, So that's really cool.
Well, I was just gonna segue because Rachel, you brought up Medusa, and that was the off-Broadway workshop. Well, I don't know what the technical term is or the contractual term is.
Yeah, it was a let me see if I can remember. It was a tier, I don't remember what tier it was, but it's some sort of actors' equity workshop, slightly staged, not a production. We can't sell tickets, but it's a developmental step.
Okay.
So
Oh, is it
that's
like a
us.
29-hour
29-hour, I
workshop?
was gonna say. Is
Similar
that
to that.
yeah, it
okay?
was that workshop that you're talking about is it was like a week and a half or 2 weeks, I think, of rehearsal and performance. So a little bit more of a relaxed process than 29 hours, which was really, really nice because unfortunately the score is rather complicated.
But so good. I still think about is it Athena's song, The Goddess in the Details? Opening of
Yes.
Act Two, was it? Yeah. So can you maybe talk about like what that workshop was like? Because there were some pretty big names attached to it.
It was so let's see, we had Heidi Blickenstaff, we had I
She's
know.
literally, if there was a person that my exact type is, it is Heidi Blickenstaff.
I
I'm
totally see
saying
that.
every single one of her songs that she's ever done. Oh my goodness.
She was amazing, and she lives up. You can meet that hero. She's amazing.
That's awesome. She will not let me down.
No. We had her and Kate Schindel and Michael Kilgore, Alexia Cielo, Theo Stockman. It was an incredibly stacked cast. L. Stephen Taylor, who's done every role in Lion King. It was just a wild and insane experience. So that was a moment where I felt like so out of control because like I felt like it was so beyond me at that point. Like I'm like, oh my goodness, like can't believe this thing that I made is now in the hands of all these people and like all of these moving parts are happening around me and I have no control over them whatsoever. And it was exhilarating and it was terrifying. It really like parts of it just didn't come together until like the day of the thing. I was like, oh my gosh, it was so scary. But it was so exciting. It was I think that was the highlight of that entire developmental process over all the years that Medusa has been in existence. It was my thesis project in NYU. And so yeah, it was very exciting and I felt a little bit like bowing and getting out of the way of like the pros. And being so excited by like the things that they discovered and the ways that they made these characters three-dimensional and asked really good important questions. One person was like, I don't think my character should exist. And we were like, oh
Oh.
no.
We're like,
Whoa.
okay, well,
And
wow.
they were right. Or at least that part needed to be really, really, it was interesting because we had built up the part for this person so that they would be more attracted to reprise it. They had done it in years in the past. And it wasn't the right choice, like story-wise. And so it was actually really kind of amazing of them to say that out loud, and like write themselves out of a future job.
I feel like it's kind of like a joke, like when you have a script that you're able to cut, like a Shakespeare script, like sometimes directors will be like, okay, like I'm buying a drink for anybody who cuts 10 of their own lines type of thing. So for somebody to just totally be like, I shouldn't be here, it's just hilarious.
Wait, Becky, is that a thing that you've been told
Well,
before?
maybe
Because
it's not a thing, but it's definitely something where I've been in the room for a script and like we needed to pare it down. And the director literally said, like drinks if you Pare
Pinch
down
one
your own
out, 10 lives.
character.
That's hilarious. Wait, we should do that one of Shakespeare plays too long. Drinks to anyone who can cut out their entire character. Like, oh, that's so silly. That's amazing.
And so, Rachel, how did you get to that point where you had this staged reading? Like, what was that process like?
Yeah, it was a lot of toil. In that, like,
Oh.
the not in a bad, I mean, maybe in a bad way. I don't know. It's interesting how much of the writing process is not actually about writing and is about like making sure that you get it in front of the right people and find people who believe in it enough to elevate it to the next stage. And frankly, I hate to say this, but it's true, like finding the money, finding the people who have the money. And this part I really have to give credit to my co-writer, Leslie Braver, who like was the one who did all of the like boots on the ground work. Happened to have some connections existing, but we also found a GM who believed in the project a lot. And that really helped with like the credibility and being able to attract some of these huge named people to work on it. I think that that workshop cost around between $125,000 and $150,000 to put on for
Wow.
2 weeks. With like 13 actors and two musicians. It's
Wow.
just it's a mind-boggling amount of money to me.
Yeah, Dawn is also like,
Well,
She knows.
I mean, it is and it isn't. Like, it makes sense to me, especially when you're talking about those names and, you know, what you're talking about having in the room. And I'm sure then once you actually put a production on Broadway, it's probably tens of millions of
Exponential.
dollars, I would think, to actually do that. So, yeah, but it's really funny because that's the world that I live in most of the time and actually really, really enjoy. So, whenever development comes up, I'm like, ooh, no one ever wants to talk about it.
Thank
No
God
one
for people like you.
wants to do it, and I love talking about it and doing it. And so, yeah, it's really interesting to me. I have kind of like a nerdy development question then. So when you do that, then do you see the people who put the money in? Do they get to come like see the final product at the end of that workshop, or are they more hands-off and they're just kind of, you know, throwing money at a bunch of different projects, and then when one sticks, then that's when they, you know, make a return? Because I feel like Broadway has to be different than, you know, regional theater. No one's looking for a return on investment. Our donors are just donating. So I'm just curious, like, do you get people who, you know, come and, oh, I donated, you know, a couple, you know, $20,000 and I want to sit and watch the rehearsal? Or just like, oh, I just donate to all these projects, and then when one makes it to Broadway, then I get the return on my investment.
Yeah, it's a
Do
great question. For
you know?
us, it was mostly the former. It was mostly like, I really believe in this project, or this is someone that I'm close to, and I want to, help support them. We had one person who wasn't a big musical person, but is big in to like the film documentary world. I don't know what big means, but successful. And he went around telling everybody, this is better than Hamilton, which is objectively untrue, but like helpful to have those hype people. So I think for any Broadway project, it's a different type of mix. Like I've heard people describe Broadway companies as each of them are sort of like their own startup with their own culture and their own mix of funding. And I think that really resonates. And so ours happened to be a lot of people who really believed in it, who weren't investing in other Broadway shows. But I think once you get to like the higher levels, and for most shows, it is people who are spreading out their investments, understanding there probably won't be a return on most of them, but it's like a sexy thing to invest in Broadway.
And it's also, you know, entrepreneurial mindset is most of what you invest in is gonna fail. You can't really have that thought process in nonprofit theater, because it's like, well, nothing's ever gonna be a return on investment, so you just have to be willing to give the money to the thing. So then, do you see those donors, like, will they see this project to the next step for you, or do they, you know, pretty much, you know, oh, great, you did the workshop and now they're stepping away, or will they continue to support?
Yes, thank you for reiterating that part of your question because I totally forgot to answer.
No, it's okay.
they are definitely emotionally invested also. They are not like, here you go. A lot of them have like strong thoughts about what how the story should go, and they want to have some artistic input. They want to feel like they're involved in some way other than just like being an angel. Here's some money, do whatever you want with it, which I think maybe some people like that, but I think a lot of people who invest in the arts really want to feel like their impact matters artistically too. So I would say everyone who has either done a large portion of fundraising or has invested a large amount has had at least some sort of informally advisory role. And of course they come to see all of the iterations and they're like, when's the next one? Like really pushing for, the next step, which is helpful, it's stressful and helpful.
It's both. I it's funny because one of the key philosophies behind philanthropy when I was learning is ask for advice and get money, ask for money and get advice. And it sounds like that's the same experience. People are once once you've asked them for some money, then they want to tell you, oh, do this, this, this. But it sounds like maybe they're more creative people to start with. And that's not necessarily what we see in like the regional theater philanthropist level. They just really love to like watch it. They don't usually want any creative input, or they just want to see you hire good actors to do good work. So
Keep
it
the thing
sounds like a
going. The
very
New
different
York
world,
scene, yeah,
and
seems
it's fascinating. Yeah, it's really interesting to me. So thanks for nerding out on that
Of course,
piece of
thanks for
it for
asking.
a second.
So, Rachel, can you tell us just this is a broad but s simple question. What is Broadway really like? So you've done kind of two, like kind of the two versions of Broadway, right? Like the workshop, like up and coming idea of something beginning, and then you are also literally on Hamilton, that is obviously an established show. What is it like day to day? I think with our Demystifying Broadway series, we've had an actor and we've had a director, and now we have you, who is a pianist and composer. How is it any different? Is it any different, or is it literally just the name that is different?
Yeah, a lot of it is very similar, I would say. You still have like a little interpersonal politic issues. You still have differences of artistic opinion and things of that nature. And like a lot of it is just very, very similar. And
Personalities.
even the level of organization or disorganization, I feel like is sort of similar. I think
Interesting.
Yeah,
That
when
that's
you were so funny.
saying, oh, we're putting things together at the last minute, I was like, well, at least it's still happening on Broadway. At least it's not just us.
No, don't feel bad about it. I don't think anybody's figured out how to like really organize themselves in this. And so that's been interesting. I was like, oh, okay, this is not like I've hit the big times and now everything is figured out. It's like everyone's still constantly figuring things out. What I will say is that there is still a level of like efficiency in Broadway that it feels like there's a bit of a machine operating behind the scenes because they have figured out at least some of the operational process to get from A to B. And I know that that's sort of contradicting what I just said, but in terms of like, the rehearsals are they're going to be in these slots
Strict,
and
yeah.
the swings are going to get 2 weeks to learn the thing, and et cetera, et cetera. We have it down to a science, how much time someone needs to prepare to be in the show. Which is most of what I saw as a rehearsal pianist was that portion of it. And we have like the 4 weeks of preview and like the you have like 20 tech tables during tech, and there's dry tech, which I had never seen before, which is when you tech, like the actors are still rehearsing in another building for a week, but I'm sitting there with all the tech people and they're like, okay, go from this cue. I do. And there's absolutely no one on stage.
Interesting. Just the
Yeah.
music.
Hard. Yes.
Like, was that hard for you?
Yes. Yes, it is.
So that was for Moulin Rouge. I did that because I was actually part of their pre-Broadway process. I was a music assistant. And so I was sitting in like the conductor's chair and I didn't know what was going on at all. Like there was Ableton that I had to cue. They like wanted to know where to put the cue light, you know, the one that tells you from stage managers that this is when you start the show. And I was like, I don't know. And I like
That's a big
suggested.
decision for me to
Yeah.
make.
And I was like, how about there? And they're like, well, that's not a good place. And I was like, well, then just put
Why'd you ask?
Seems like I was set up for failure here.
If you didn't want my opinion.
But yeah, so there is a like an expectation of institutional knowledge, I think, at the Broadway level where people just don't tell you what's happening. And you're like, all right, I have to figure out what's happening in this culture and like figure out where I fit. Which is true of any new job, I feel like, and is also true at the professional level. But I thought that was really interesting. I hope that
That
answers
sounds
the
similar
question.
to Dahlia as well, where it's like, it obviously has a layer of like, excitement and yeah, like things move efficiently, but it's still people doing theater, which is what we've all been doing for how many years. It feels the same ultimately. The goal is the same to put on a show. It's mostly just the package it comes in. But otherwise,
Exactly.
it's still personalities and people and saying the wrong thing accidentally and answering an email and getting to, it's all kind of just the same stuff in the end,
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, with that many personalities involved in something, I don't feel like you could ever iron out all of the kinks because as soon as you do, then you're hiring a whole new cast for a whole new thing. And I think that's the problem. We always joke. I don't know if you guys remember, we had one cast here at Flag Shakes where it was just like absolute magical fireworks situation.
Perfection.
It was our Comedy of Errors cast
Oh,
from
nice.
what year was that?
That was 2022.
2022. It was our 2022 Comedy of Errors cast. Like everyone's still just like moon eyes and is like, remember? Because it was like, the director, the stage manager, the cast, the designers, I mean, like everything just magic. And what's funny is, even in those cases, like some of those people who were involved, we've worked with other times and had different issues with. But it was like somehow just like the perfect synergy in this one situation. So definitely not like perfect people. But it was just like, everyone's lives were just in a space where they were all in the right headspace at the right time and like doing the thing. And man,
And the
everyone still talks
show.
about it.
I mean, obviously the just silliness and positivity of the show, I think, makes for that.
Oh, well, it was so funny because we lost our director for the first week. Do you remember? She couldn't come for the first week, but we happened to have an amazing text person who was just in town at the time from England, who just like took over the first week and everything was just, yeah, that was so amazing. But yeah, I feel like no matter what you do in theater, you're always just going to have so many personalities that it's going to be difficult. And it's nice. It's kind of nice to be like, well, money isn't the answer because there's certainly a lot more money being thrown around. So, it's kind of like, okay, well, it's not, it's really just that there's so many people and what we're doing is so complicated. So,
And highly emotional, and
yeah, very
we care a
emotional.
lot.
And also, like, very hard deadlines. Like, sorry, because
Yeah.
in an interview, like for a non-theater company, when they're like, tell us about a time you met a deadline, or like that you didn't meet a deadline. And I'm like, everything in theater is a
Is a deadline,
deadline. Like, we all have to like
Be
work together
ready.
in some fashion because opening night is coming. Like, you know.
Yeah, I've never been in a show where like, opening night is canceled. Like, you
Yeah, we're
can't. That's
pushing it
not a thing.
back.
That's not a thing that happens. You just do it. Yeah, it's crazy. Oh, goodness.
We've canceled a preview before, but we've never
Yeah,
canceled
but
an
yeah,
opening.
you can't. But that's also, yeah, no one's buying a ticket to that show,
So, Rachel, could you give us, okay, so this is a multifaceted question or two parts. Some tips on the pianist side of like how to maybe like show up for the cast or like show up for that rehearsal room. And then also any tips for performers, you've played for auditions, anything that you can help on either side of the piano.
Yeah, great question. So I think as a pianist and music director, the thing that I found the most helpful is to like frame all of my prep as like, how do I help everyone the best way? Instead of being like, am I going to do a good job? Oh, this is a scary room. That's so many people. I know this person is hard to work with, blibbity blah. Instead, you can go, all right, there's going to be as many learning styles as there are people in the room. People are bringing their insecurities with them. They want to do a good job, especially if the composer is in the room. That's a lot of extra pressure for them. So, anything that I, as a music director, can do to set a calm, efficient, tone for the room is what I want to do. And then I can sort of sneakily have like a meta mission to like figure out, okay, this person has a great ear. This person, you know, doesn't, or like this one, they're not gonna try to sing along the first time, and I just need to know that. And like, okay, they want a plunk track, and I need to figure that out without them saying it usually. Or I'll offer like three versions of, hey, do you want to like sing along with this? Do you want to like call and response? Do you want me to just give you a plunk track and like you go home with it and come back tomorrow? And just like understand that that's actually probably the most efficient way to run the processes to tend to each person's individual needs within a group setting. So
Not
that's
hard at all. Not
no.
managing so many different people.
And I don't ever feel like I do an amazing job, but I think the fact that I try means something to the actors, and I like there's a level of trust that's built there just from that most of the time.
Absolutely.
So that's what it's funny. It's like not really about the music at all, that part. But I think that's what we're talking about, right? It's like the human aspect is often the hardest to solve, and the most important. So that's what I'd say for as a pianist. As a performer, I would say, especially when you're coming into an audition session, because I love playing auditions. It makes me very happy. Same thing, it was like a lightning moment of like trying to help that person feel calm and supported. And ideally, all pianists are like that. At some are grouchy and they don't want to be there. And I'm like, why are you doing this?
Yes,
Why are you here?
after this, I have a nightmare story that I will be telling to
Oh
get your opinion
gosh, I'm
on.
excited. Well, and so for performers, I would just say like, just even if it doesn't seem like it, the pianist is your best friend in that, and your only collaborator in that environment. And so just go in with that framework, and then like, and be prepared, have all of your stuff written in their music, make sure that it's like easy for them to like common sense things. Don't bring it in on an iPad that's cracked where they're gonna like risk bleeding when they turn the page. Just have it like nice laid out for them. Have a care towards, you know, oh, there's a key change here, I should circle it, it's unexpected or whatever. And then like rehearse what you're going to say to the pianist before you come in, because you will likely be very nervous, and it's easy to say too much or too little depending. And so just having your key like, all right, start here and here, follow me here, whatever it is. That's all a pianist usually needs if your music is well marked. So that's all it is. Like think yourself through a pianist's shoes and when you're preparing your music, and that will help. And if you're really not sure, just talk to somebody who is a pianist and be like, hey, can I buy you a coffee? And like, can we go through my book and you tell me what's wrong with it or how I should communicate about it? Can help with those nerves a lot. Because I, as your pianist, can also advocate for you with the team after you leave, and I could say, oh, I messed this up, but they carried it off really well, or you know, whatever. I like to try to say that in the room so that the actor knows that I
Oh, that's
know.
so sweet.
Oh
Gosh, I
yeah.
wish I've never had that before.
Oh, I'm really sorry, and that's wrong. I should have that. So yeah, that's what I would say. All right, I have to hear the nightmare story.
I have a this is a two-pronged. So, I mean, I went to musical theater school, what is that? 12 years ago. So, I also want to double check that like what I was taught isn't like old school anymore, right? Oh my gosh, old school, what an idea. But like when I went to school, we had whole sessions about, how to talk to your pianist, how to audition, right? And so the things we were taught was like, walk up to them first, like Obviously, like say hello to the people at the table, but head straight to your pianist. Tell them your name, ask their name. Once you do that, hand them the book. And then it's like, talk through your markings, show them your markings. Never snap at them. Like, don't give them your tempo. Like, use your own body to give them your tempo. Like, we had all of these things we were supposed to learn, right? So, like, are there specific little actual etiquette details that I might be missing or that are old school nowadays?
That's a great question. I would say you don't need to tell me your, you can tell me your name, but you don't need to ask mine. You can the on your body versus snapping is a good, I don't mind personally, but I understand that some people do, and it's always good to err
Just
on the
snapping
side
at
of,
them.
yeah, sort of err on the side of what the most neurotic your pianist can be. And I don't mean that derogatorily. We have, I mean, my personal ones that and I'm just one person, but I would prefer people not to wear perfume because I think I have an allergy, and so my nose just feels terrible with certain perfumes, and I'm like, oh man. And then also don't shake my hand because I'm already touching a dirty piano.
About to play.
And yeah, and if I shake everybody's hands, I'm just like, oh, I feel gross.
Oh, I've definitely never shaken a hand, so whew,
Yeah.
good.
It's not a big deal. It's not like I'm like, oh, well, she shouldn't be hired because of that. Or like,
It's just not your preference.
yeah, you don't need to touch the pianist. Like
Oh, for
on some
sure.
people will like put a hand on the back while they're
Oh,
explaining, and I'm like, you
no.
don't do
Oh,
that.
gosh, no.
No. Yeah. They're just a human. They're a human who's had to do this like 500 times. And if you can treat them like a human and say thank you, say
Yes,
thank you,
oh,
even if
totally.
you're upset with your performance, that's a tough one. If you messed up and you're mad, it's okay, but like don't take it out on the pianist if it wasn't their fault. And if the pianist does mess up, don't throw them a shady
Yeah, totally.
look because hopefully, like the table behind, they'll know they've been working with this pianist all day. They'll know if this pianist is not doing well. And if they don't know, they're not a company that you want to work with.
And that's kind of what I've resolved to. It's like, but the fact that, I mean, of course, again, in musical theater school, we were always taught like they're on your side. They can advocate for you or not advocate for you. So the things you do if like, or if you say something rude or do something incorrectly, they can be like, nah, man, don't hire her. Or they can be like, she was so nice. I totally messed up, but did you see how she got like, that's good to hear that you guys do that because like I had heard that that was something that could happen. I just never actually knew if it did happen. So that's great that if you actually do advocate and say, she's easy to work with, I loved her or whatever. So my story is very recent. The girls, we were all down in Phoenix having like a little hang. And we double tasked it with an audition because Dawn and her husband had like a night at a fancy hotel. So we all went to lunch and went to like laid by the pool. But I also had an audition that day. And I had like a minute in the audition room. They were doing like 8 or 16 cuts. Like it was awful. And like a 30-second monologue. And I drove 2.5 hours. You know what I mean? Like it's the worst. So yeah, so I walk in and I do all my normal things. Like I walk up to the pianist, I like say my name, I ask him his name, he says, hello. I can already tell he is like not in a good mood. I'm like, this is not good. I set my book down and I'm doing a song from Follies. And I explained to him my cut. And then I'm like, oh, and then for tempo, and I start to give him my tempo, and he goes, I know the song. And I was like, my good sir, what if I had plans? Like, you have no idea what I'm doing with this number. Also, how do I know you know this song? And so, of course, I wasn't gonna argue with him and start snapping at him. So I was like, okay.
Here
So
we
then
go.
we go to do my song, and he completely does everything opposite of what I've told him to do. And thankfully, the tempo was fine. But I was like, sir. So I just don't think, I don't know, maybe I made him mad by trying to give him the tempo, or he might have just messed up. You guys really can make or break an audition for someone, even if I didn't technically mess up. Like, I hit all my notes, I remembered my words. I did my monologue just fine. So I technically did my audition just fine, but the actual vibe that a pianist can bring to an audition can really assist a singer because
Yeah.
if we feel set up to fail, we probably will.
Oh, no.
You know what I mean? So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry you had that experience.
Oh, no. Yeah, it's the way it goes. So, yeah, really weird, really weird. But
Yeah.
that's good advice. Thank you.
Yeah. This is starting to explain to me why people will be like, I'm so sorry. Like, I'm so sorry that my music's in a binder. I'm so sorry that, hi, I'm sorry. I'm like, what? Wait, you did everything that I, why are you apologizing? It's because people are treating people like that. It makes me so mad. My tempo version of this song is different than your tempo. I don't care if I know, I don't care if I wrote the song. If you have a different tempo than me,
Version. Yeah, because
tell
like, what if
me.
I wanted to do something different to show these auditioners that I had a fresh take on Follies? Like, who knows? You don't know what I'm doing with it. Like,
Yeah,
that's the whole point of
that's
an
yeah.
audition is I bring my own thing to the table. So what if I was doing Follies at double time? I don't know. I probably wouldn't have
Precisely.
sung that ballad at double time, but it's so
But who
silly.
knows? And now that pianist will never know. Yeah.
Anywho, well, any last minute things about Broadway, tips, tricks, being a composer that you want to share with us?
Gosh. Life in New
Oh.
York. The biggest overall thing for all of it is just like do whatever you need to do to stay in touch with being human, and that this is like not our lives. It is our passion. It's wonderful, but like if it becomes your life, it will make you miserable, I
Yeah.
think. And so just find whatever you can to stay in touch with the human that you are outside of the grind, that it can become instead of like a source of just joy.
Or letting Broadway, like the idea of Broadway being Broadway. What do I
Give you
mean by
rose-colored
this?
glasses, where
Like
you,
it's still a job. Yeah. It's Broadway, but it's still, you still have to show up to work every day, kind of a thing. I don't
And
know.
Broadway's not everything. It's just not. It's cool, but it doesn't make or break your validity as a person or an artist. It's just this little commercial corner of the world. And there's a lot more art happening out throughout the country that is making a lot more meaningful change in the lives of its participants and its audience. So, Snaps to that. Rachel, how can people, if you want them to find you, how can they find you? How can they find your work? You know, you've got a couple albums for your work, so. We have my album. I have two albums out now. Wow. And they're both on Spotify. They're called The Anxiety Project and Unpacking Song Cycle, and they're both under Rachel Dean and David Brush. And then you can find more about me at racheldeanmusic.com. And I think that's enough to get you started.
And doesn't
Yay.
Medusa have a concept album as well, or am I misremembering?
There is some stuff out there on SoundCloud, yes. And so MedusaTheMusical.com, with dashes in between each word is for Medusa. I'm not sure if those I think that SoundCloud might be defunct, but they are out there.
Somewhere. It's
Yes.
a treasure hunt.
Oh,
Yes.
SoundCloud, what an experience. Yes. Truly.
Amazing.
Yay. Thank you so much for being on. I learned a little bit more about you, and oh, it was just so lovely to hear you chat about your journey and your experience and your tips and tricks and just being a human. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. This was absolutely delightful.
Of course. Okay. Well, Dawn had to run, but shall we wrap up?
Let's do it.
Okay. Thanks for listening to this month's episode of Untamed Shrews. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Becky.
Join us for our next episode in September. Follow Untamed Shrews on our Instagram at Untamed Shrews Podcast and on the Flagshakes website. All episodes of Untamed Shrews can be found wherever you get your podcasts, as well as on sunsounds.org.
Subscribe to the podcast, leave a review, put us in your Instagram stories, donate at flagshakes.org/donate, become a podcast sponsor, and buy Shrew Crew merch. Help support the Shrew Crew. This episode of Untamed Shrews, starring Hannah Johnson, Dawn Tucker, Becky Zeritsky, and Rachel Dean. Show art by Calliope Ludecker, podcast theme song by Cadence Lamb, podcast produced and edited by Hannah Johnson, and presented by Flagstaff Shakespeare Festival.
Bye,
Bye!
guys.